My name is Lydia Tang. I'm a Special Collections Librarian at Michigan State University, and I'm talking today with Ed Barton, who is a volunteer curator of the Changing Men Collection in Special Collections at Michigan State University. Today is November 13th, 2015, and we are recording at the Vincent Voice Library Studio. Hi, Ed.
Hi.
So could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Let's see. I start back here on a non-thesis master's in family and child ecology in about 1990. And as I was checking the university library catalog, which we called MAGIC back in those days, it said see special collections for the particular item that I was looking for. And so I went down to special collections and found that they had an 18-box donation from the archivist of the National Organization for Changing Men, which was the pro-feminist branch of the men's movement. And I found that the 18 boxes had hardly been opened, let alone sorted, organized, and cataloging. And then to back up just a little bit from that, in 1989, Professor Bruce Curtis from the MSU Department of American Thought and Language attended the National Organization for Changing Men's conference in Pittsburgh of that year and found out about this archive. Professor Curtis came back and talked to Peter Berg, head of Special Collections, and Peter said, yes, that would fit in our American Radicalism collection. And so Art Stawinski, who was the archivist, had a niece, I believe, who was a student here at MSU. And so one time when he was coming up to visit his niece, he put the 18 boxes in the back of his station wagon and brought them to Michigan State University Libraries and delivered the donation. So that's the background of how this all started. I finished my master's in 91 or so, and after I found this archive, Professor Curtis, Peter Berg, and I had a meeting about, okay, what are we going to do with these 18 boxes? And Professor Curtis said, well, I don't have time, and Peter Berg said, well, I don't have time, and so me, Ed Barton, said, well, I guess I've got time. So they cleared a table or two for me in Special Collections. And this was back in the old days when you got into the reading room through the back hallway as opposed to the nice reading room we have for the Patriarch's Room today. And so I started sorting and organizing. Personally, I come up through the mythopoetic branch of the men's movement. The soundbite there is where the guys go out in the woods on weekends and bang on drums as part of our personal healing process. That's a soundbite. It's much more depth to it than that. And so I wanted to have a broad-based Changing Men's collection, and or collections, I should say. And so I started getting mythopoetic materials donated. And I was familiar with some of the men's rights people and some of the father's rights people, so I started contacting them and getting donations from those various people in the various branches. The other main piece is that when the Promise Keepers started up, I started gathering Promise Keepers materials so that, because that's another aspect, it's the Christian branch of the men's movement, and I've been to a couple of their conferences, and they borrow very heavily on some of the authors from the mythopoetic branch. So that's basically how it evolved. It's been built almost entirely on donations from people all around the world. We had materials in the Changing Men collections from Canada, Australia, New Zealand, UK, France, Malta, Japan, and probably some other places, but those, and plus the US. So those are ones I can name right off of the top of my head. We have over 400 newsletters cataloged in the Changing Men collection by title. And we've got another probably 100 to catalog. Another aspect of the Changing Men's collection is what we call vertical files. And vertical files are a file folder, legal size, with a tab on it about who it's about. And as example, we have a men's health vertical file. We have a Robert Bly vertical file. We have Australian Men's Movement vertical file. And that's just a sampling of a very few of the nearly 400 vertical files that we have cataloged. Then we have archive boxes. And an archive box is where a particular donor or organization has donated materials, say, from 3 inches wide up to multiple archive boxes of 25, 30 inches in depth. Some of the archive boxes, for an example, is the Midwest Men's Center out of Chicago, the West Michigan Men's Center out of Kalamazoo, which was my original men's group before I came to Michigan State and before I got involved in the Mankind Project. The Mankind Project, that's M-A-N, capital K-I-N-D, Project, is the major active part of the Mythopoetic branch worldwide. My participation in the movement and these organizations has been extensive. For an example, I have staffed 55 New Warrior Training Adventures, which is the initiatory weekend of the Mankind Project. I have gone to a number of men's rights and father's rights conferences. And of course, when I go to the conference, I pick up all the stuff at the conference and all the free handouts and everything and bring it all back and put it into a vertical five or an archive box, because all of that ephemera, I guess you would call it, is part of that conference, because the people were often there and had these free handouts on the table. And I've had a real tough time training anyone else to know how to do that. So even though it stretches my personal budget extensively, I go to as many as I can just for that purpose. And as an example, I just came back from the Mankind Project World Elder Gathering in Hawaii last month. That would be October of 2015, and brought back the banner over the stage and all the handouts, and there was a cookbook for the location where we were, so I brought a copy of that back for Peter Burke's cookbook collection. And I stopped at the Black Sand Beach, and they had a little concession stand, and not any wider than this table, and I looked and said, oh, Men of Hawaii calendar. Oh, and the next pile over was Women of Hawaii calendar. And said, oh, okay. So I brought bought a copy of both, as when I see good women's stuff, I bring that back too, because that's also an important aspect of American radicalism. So basically, my role in creating this collection at MSU is I have been the person that I've been volunteering consistently since 1990 or 1991. Seeking all of these donations, going to conferences to pick up materials for the Changing Men collections, and more recently I've been actively involved in preparing finder's guides for the archive boxes, and I think I'm up to box 136 with complete annotated finder's guides, to the extent that if there are multiple articles in a particular file in an archive box, I will list each of those articles so that once this goes on the web or is sent out in other ways, the person doesn't have to come to our library to find that particular article. They can go to their local library and get it in a way that's convenient for them.
So in addition to the currently uncatalogued materials, how big is this collection right now? How much has it grown?
Well, from 18 boxes, just in archive boxes, when we're at 136, that gives you an idea of how much it has grown. This is clearly the largest men's movement archive in North America, and I suspect in the world. I'm really not aware of anywhere else that there's anything comparable to this in the English language. I have heard that there might be something in Germany, in, I think, Berlin. I don't have data as to what the name of that might be or what its size might be. Because I don't read German, so that is a slight hindrance.
So how do you see this collection evolving into the future? How has the men's movement evolved? Could you explain more about changing men, the term, as well?
Great question. Well, let's start with changing men first. And there's one of our donors who was very upset with selecting that name because the magazine for the pro-feminist movement for a number of years was called Changing Men. And he's a men's rights person.
Could you explain a little bit more about pro-feminist, what that means, and then also the men's rights?
Okay. The pro-feminist branch of the men's movement was the first one to start up, and these were consisted largely of husbands and boyfriends of active feminists who wanted to get together and support women and feminism. So that's what pro-feminist means, and as I said earlier, NOCM was the original name for the pro-feminist branch once it formally organized. Today, it's a national organization for men against sexism, is the NOMAS, is the current title. Let's do father's rights first. Father's rights basically supports men with children who feel that they have been discriminated against by the judicial system. And so they're emphasis is on getting, used to be visitation. Now, the important change in that aspect, they said, we're not visitors. And so today it's called parenting time. So they have, in fact, had a major impact on the change of the terminology. Another aspect is promotion of joint custody. In fact, there's a joint custody newsletter where, okay, we're going to separate, we can't live together anymore, and let's have joint custody. So that's the father's rights branch. Men's rights is more that men are discriminated against or made fun of, or that type of approach, that type of media description of men, such as calling them wimps, or anything that discounts men and the male body and the male psychic. So there's a whole branch of the men's rights. And one of the interesting books is, oh, I can't think of the author right now. She wrote, who's Well, Stift was her later one. And she had written an earlier book about against men, basically. And she's a journalist, and after looking at the situation of men between her earlier book in the 90s, I believe, she wrote Stift in like late 2000s, and basically showed how this culture, this society, stiffs men into a box, which is harmful to men, and therefore harmful to women, and therefore harmful to children, and particularly boys. Because one of the things is, at a very early age, we're often told, big boys don't cry. So what does that mean? Stuff your emotions. Don't share your feelings. And so then we wonder why men, as they grow up, aren't able to share their feelings. And of course, that's one of the things that the Mythopoetic Branch and the Mankind Project in particular emphasize, because we say, okay, how are you feeling? Mad, sad, glad, scared, fear, shame. And we focus on those very simple words, with the idea, okay, say it and then feel it in your body and realize that you can share it. So, can feel it and express it. That's the way I want to say that. So, today, the pro-feminist branches, i.e. NOMAS, is still active. They have an annual conference, which they currently share by co-sponsoring another conference. Last year was their 40th conference, and it was in New Jersey, and they were co-sponsoring the Mothers Against Battered Mothers, and that's shorthand, but and the battered mothers often are those, particularly in a divorce situation, who are attacked by the husband or the ex in the divorce and ridiculed because they try and express how they feel about having their children taken away from them. So it's not all one-sided, and there are very narcissistic men who delight in treating their wife or their ex in this way, knowing if they can get her to break down on the stand, in effect, that is evidence that she's not suitable to be a parent. So that's very much still current. I can't say what the percentage of divorces have that kind of an element, and I'd never heard of it before I went to the conference. So talk about a learning curve for me. That was a major learning curve. Father's rights. There aren't really many organizations that are still active, nor for men's rights. With respect to Promise Keepers, they're still doing their conferences, but they're not filling the stadium like they did in the early days. And
the early days meaning around when?
Mid-90s, I would guess. Mm-hmm. Don't hold me to that date. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we have an archive box in Special Collections where a researcher has done a whole set of research documents on the Promise Keepers. And I don't remember his name. The significance of the Changing Men collections is that it is a major research tool. We often have one or two people a semester coming in to Michigan State University Libraries specifically for research in the Changing Men collections. In fact, there's an article coming out in some law journal this fall by a researcher who came and did the research for that article in the Changing Men collections.
Wow.
So, as I said, there's nothing else like it in North America. I think we had one man that came from Australia to do research, and possibly two. So it's an archive of how men have evolved in various aspects of their growth, development, maturity, emotional health, starting in the in the 80s, because that's when NOCM would have been involved, and continuing through the present time. And period. Other thing is I'm still getting donations in. Every once in a while, I'll get an email and they'll say, "Are you still doing this?" I say, "Yes, what have you got?" and "How much have you got?" And so we have an email conversation and I give him the email address and in it comes. And
And they know you because you go to all these conferences, and you are also a writer or an editor of some journals?
Editor and author, yes.
Uh-huh. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, the first one is called Mythopoetic Perspectives of Men's Healing Work, an anthology for therapists and others, published in 2000. I'm the editor of that, and there's an introductory part, and then there's section two is the therapeutic aspects of that. Section three is the first peer-reviewed research on the Mankind Project. And part four is a feminist roundtable. And I have John Rowan from the UK, and names aren't coming to me. One gal was from MIT and the other gal is from Canada, and I commented in my conclusion about Gloria Steinem's book on, I believe it was self-respect, I'm not sure I got the title just right, and a lot of what she talked about in that book was what we talk about in mythopoetic men's circles. So men's circles, that's something I haven't mentioned. One of the strong points of the Mankind Project is that after the New Warrior Training Adventure, men can sit in small circles that we call I-group and continue their healing process that they begin on the weekend.
Can you talk a little bit about the training process as well?
Yes. The New Warrior Training Adventure is a men's initiatory weekend started in Wisconsin in 1985. In fact, they just celebrated the 30th anniversary of the NWTA, as we call it for shorthand, in France in September. And we don't talk too much about what happens on the weekend because it's not that we're trying to be secretive. It's because if a man knows what's coming next in the weekend, he's in his head trying to figure out what he's going to say instead of experiencing the process and feeling it in his body and going from that direction. And we've been accused of being secretive, and people just don't understand that there is a reason why we are, that we don't publicize what the specifics of what happens on the weekend. And there's a confidentiality issue there, too. I mean, it would not be appropriate for us to talk about what a man's process is on the weekend. That's his process, and he's free to talk to it about it to anybody he chooses, but not for the organization to talk about his process. Also, another major change in the I groups is that many of them are what we call open I groups. And that means a man can come and sit in the I group before he does the NWTA if he chooses. And usually, once they sit in the I group and see what it does for the other men and see what it does for them, they're willing to do the NWTA. And if it doesn't work for them, there's no sense in spending the money to do the NWTA.
Can you talk about the I group?
The I group is 6 to 12 men who sit in circle. There is a particular format of what's called a check-in round and a work round and then a blessing round and a closing. It's a little bit more than that, but that gives you the overall view of it. And sit in circle so that everybody is equidistant and can see everybody. And don't sit in chairs like in a stadium, in a movie studio. Mm-hmm. And basically that's a shorthand view of the I group.
Yeah, and then I interrupted you earlier about after the training adventure, then the drum circle, is that what is the last process of that event?
No, there is, after the weekend, there is called what's called a primary integration training, which can be one night a week for 10 weeks, or sometimes they do, it's called PIT, P-I-T, PIT intensives on a weekend. Especially in a center like Central Great Lakes here that I'm a member of, because that is Southeast Michigan, Lansing area, Southwest Michigan, Windsor, Toledo, and Cleveland. And as spread out as that is, it often works better to do a weekend intensive instead of having a special pit where you meet one night a week for 10 weeks or 12 weeks. The weekly session is better, and it just isn't feasible for many men. So that's why the pit intensive has been developed.
Mm-hmm. Great. Could you talk a little bit about some of the key people represented in the collection and your relationship with them?
Well, first of all, Professor Bruce Curtis, who has donated some of his materials. Probably secondly, I would say Art Stawinski from the National Organization for Changing Men, because he made the initial donation that started all of this. Robert Bly, who was the poet whose book Iron John topped the New York Times bestseller list for, I think, 2 years in 1990. Richard Doyle is one of the men's rights individuals. It's his archive boxes I have next to do the finder's guide on, and who has donated a number of items. Sam Famiano is another one. American Men's Studies Association. I haven't talked about that yet. NOCOM/NOMAS had a men's studies task force. And the men's studies task force meeting would be the day or the afternoon before the Men and Masculinity Conference. And there were some that found that the pro-feminist branch was too restrictive on what they would allow for topics and papers for the participants in the Men's Studies Task Force conference. And so there was a split. 26, about 25 years ago, maybe 30, where a number of the Men's Studies Task Force people broke off and formed the American Men's Studies Association, which would allow men like fathers' rights scholars and men's rights scholars and mythopoetic scholars who did not have a specific pro-feminist bent slash agenda to participate. And that was, well, several years ago. And Sam Famiano was the initial president of the American Men's Studies Association and then was secretary for a long time. And when he passed, the then president of Men's Studies Association had Sam's papers and so forth and has donated those to the Changing Men collection. So we have that historical piece. Let's see, who else? Other names. Well, Bill Koth and Rich Tosi are two of the founders of the Mankind Project, and both of them have made multiple box donations of materials. Another very important person is Francis Bomley out of St. Louis, who has donated his materials and has been a major donor to the Changing Men Collections Endowment, and has covered the postage for a number of donations. Another one is Gordon Clay out of Brookings, Oregon. Gordon, National Men's Resource webpage, I believe, if I've got the title is correct. And Gordon used to have a motorhome that he had bookshelves in. And so he drove his motorhome around to various events and said, come on in, people, and look at my men's books. Because back in those days, there wasn't a... And so Gordon donated his 5,600 books to the Changing Men Collection, plus a number of other popular culture magazines, vertical files, videotapes, and Francis Bomley covered the cost of the freight of those from Brookings, Oregon to MSU libraries, as Gordon is retired and has health challenges at the moment. And this was one of the things. Gordon left those two Changing Men collections in his will. And he said, there's no reason why my daughter needs to struggle with this after I'm gone or no longer able to do this. And so he made the arrangements, and they're now here in the library.
Great.
So those are the names that come to me speedily.
Great. Jumping back to when researchers come to visit this collection, do they work one-on-one with you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Are there some things that you would like future researchers to know about this collection?
Well, I think the thing is to have the researcher contact Special Collections or contact me with their research question and what they're looking for, some idea of what they're wanting. And then I, as long as I'm here, can then communicate with them and say, this is what we've got. Yes, we've got a lot of stuff in this area, or I'm not sure how much there is. And then usually we will work out a mutually convenient date for them to come to MSU libraries and research. And because the it's all closed stacks in Special Collections. And so, yes, I work with them one-on-one because I'm usually the one that goes and pulls the materials for them to use in the reading room. So... And what's going to happen when I'm no longer here? Well, that's one reason for getting the finder's guides done and so forth, so that that stuff is out there.
Yeah, great. Okay. Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
It's been a pleasure. As you can probably sense, I enjoy talking about the Changing Men collections.
Great, thank you.
You bet. Couple of more things to about with respect to researchers in particular. In 2000, much of the Changing Men collection was microfilmed, and there are a number of libraries around the world that have purchased this microfilm. So some of these resources are available, and they are a little outdated, as that's 15 years ago. So the news is that there is a digitization project in process where the company will be digitizing something like 2,000 pages of men's movement newsletters, strictly newsletters. Another factor is the scope of the archive boxes. I spoke about the 136 that I had prepared finder's guides for, and there's another 150 or more archive boxes that I still have to organize and prepare finder's guides for. Much of this is a Mankind Project materials, which is an ongoing collection of materials, and one of the real interesting topics that's just come up on the Mankind Project leader list, that's an email list, is transgendered men, and are they welcomed on the New Warrior Training Adventure weekend, and how do we not out them in the process unless they want to be outed? And so that's very cutting edge. And then one other thing, you asked during the break about the scope of the men's movement. And pro-feminism pretty much reached around the world, I believe, at least in the English-speaking part of the world. I know there were Achilles' Heels, a publication out of UK, which was the magazine of the pro-feminist branch there.
Did it originate in the United States?
I'm not sure about that. I think it was kind of spontaneous in that men that were supporting women in various countries started to meet and organized, and I'm sure there's probably a history of the pro-feminist movement somewhere that I can't think of right now that would be have more clarity in answering that question. Now, one of the newsletters we have from France is the Father's Rights newsletter. And the newsletter we have cataloged from Malta is a Men's Rights Association newsletter. And all of these are basically from the 90s. And generic, is that the word I want? Spontaneous. Men, besides fathers in the U.S., were feeling challenged by aspects of the divorce system. And so they just grew and
seemed to have parallel themes internationally?
Yes, yeah. Parallel. I'd say similar themes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, well, great. Thank you so much for adding these extra things.